a move that California has to go to zero emission. Can you explain to us what is this about?
There was a time in my childhood in the Central Valley that you couldn't see both sides of the valley, right? There was just a lot of smog and a lot of dust. There's been a lot of positive things about this movement, but there's also been a lot of challenges, and that is a huge issue that we have. Like, large hydro is not considered renewable under California law, SB 54.
And the timeline is only a few years away, right?
Correct. We flip a switch tomorrow and get rid of all fossil fuel vehicles, all fossil fuel generators, the state would be in immediate blackout. Let me be very clear, like, I'm a huge EV guy. Like, I think that's a great technology. But in reality, there is a lot of work that needs to be done to meet these goals.
My guest today is Heath Flora, California Assembly Member. Today, we'll discuss California's initiative to go to zero emission and the challenges in this process.
What we are is a group of people, both senators and assembly members, Democrats and Republicans, that want to get something done.
In the future view of California, do you think that the oil and gas space is gone? I'm Siam Ekwerami. Welcome to California Insider. Heath, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
We want to talk to you about the move that California has to go to zero emission. Can you explain to us what is this about?
For years, California has tried to lead the way when it comes to green technology, green energy, a green environment, a green economy. And we've really done a lot of amazing things. And really over the probably the last decade, you know, we put a lot of time and energy and money into really trying to get people out of fossil fuel burning cars and into electric vehicles. And with that, there's been a lot of growing pains. A lot of things have worked well. And then there's been quite a few things that have been a challenge for the state to kind of grapple with and deal with as we roll out this new green economy. I think for so many of us, you know, I was born and raised in California. My family came here in the 20s. And, you know, there was a time in my childhood in the Central Valley that you couldn't see both sides of the valley, right? There was just a lot of smog and a lot of dust. You know, where we live is just a little bit, about 90 miles really east of San Francisco. And so the prevailing winds kind of blew a lot of that smog and that dirty air into our area. But it was really tough to breathe at times. And so really in the last 20 years, though, when we started moving into this electrification, the valley has really cleaned up its air quality. And so there's been a lot of positive things about this movement, but there's also been a lot of challenges. And, you know, I think we can certainly discuss those. But with every action, there's a reaction. And at times that reaction disproportionately hurts certain sectors of our society, whether it be low income or middle class folks, you know, that may not have the money to buy an expensive electric vehicle, or, you know, there's the infrastructure. You know, where are we putting, you know, the charging stations, and how far do these vehicles go for people to get back and forth from work? So there's just been a lot of challenges with it, for sure.
So based on what you have seen, there has been direct impact on the communities in California. It's not just, so there's some thoughts that when California does something, the whole world will follow.
Yeah.
Is it both? Or has been direct impact as well here?
It's probably more direct impact. A lot of folks around the world, you know, I don't want to speak for them, they see what California does because we tend to lead the way, you know, so both good and bad. So they're seeing a lot of the challenges that we've had. Right now, as we try to electrify everything, we don't have the infrastructure to support that right now. We don't have the ability to generate power enough to support that. You know, if some of the very, very progressive environmental groups that are in the state, if they got their way, where we flip a switch tomorrow and get rid of all fossil fuel vehicles, all fossil fuel generators, right? The state would be in immediate blackout. We do not have the ability to have enough green energy to really do what they want right now. Worldwide, people are seeing that. In some ways, I do believe California, we've got the cart before the horse a little bit. We really probably should have focused on the infrastructure side of things, building up our grid, making it more green energy, whether it's wind or solar, you know, and that's the other thing we could talk about is, like, we only really like solar and wind in California. Everywhere else in the world, you can talk about geothermal, you can talk about hydro, you know, nuclear. Where in California, we really just stay focused on wind and solar, so that's also going to be a huge concern.
Now, you are part of the problem-solving mm-hmm. caucus mm-hmm. in California legislative body. Mm-hmm. You guys have been working on this. What are the plans for the grid, as you mentioned?
We've been working a lot on the hydrogen side of things, really trying to get hydrogen as part of the clean energy portfolio, because for the Central Valley folks, you know, hydrogen is actually very valuable to us. Whether it's a semi or a tractor, you know, we can run those off of hydrogen a lot easier than we can run them off of battery power, right? So that is something that we really, really do care about as a caucus. Senator Josh Newman, who is a dear Democratic colleague of mine, a dear friend, but he's been working very heavily on that, just trying to make sure that that's part of the future. And right now, though, some of our environmental friends, again, they don't like it. And so really about every turn, we kind of get roadblocks put in place. And so we're just constantly trying to beat that back a little bit and just make sure that as we move forward, right, with a green society, it works for everybody. You know, it doesn't just work for LA or San Francisco. We have to have it work for all of Californians.
And in terms of the grid, we have been hearing from some experts that solar and wind are not reliable and they might not be enough, right?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, solar is not reliable because as soon as the sun goes down, we don't have solar, right? And if the wind doesn't blow, then we don't have wind. And so, no, it is not reliable. And that is a huge issue that we have. Like, large hydro is not considered renewable under California law, SB 54, that was passed a number of years ago. And that's really, really troublesome. Our friends to the north in Oregon and Washington, I think like 70% of their energy comes from large hydro. Just because we don't generate in California, you know, we buy it from Arizona, New Mexico, you know, Washington, Oregon, Nevada. Well, where's all that energy coming from? So it's a little bit of a false sense of like reality. Just because we don't generate that electron in the state of California doesn't necessarily mean it's clean, right? And so our neighbors are doing all this fossil fuel burning and doing all these things, and then we import that energy to make ourselves feel better, right? But in reality, we don't have enough green energy produced within the state to really for the supply.
So. Why does hydro considered not green?
It's a great question. It's how it's produced is what they have an issue with. You know, we can take methane from dairies and turn that into energy. But a lot of our enviro friends, they don't like dairies. They would prefer the dairy cows to move out of the state of California. So it's very, very one-sided, and they just think that, you know, one size fits all for everybody, and it simply doesn't work that way.
What about nuclear? Because we had Diablo Canyon, then the governor is trying to keep it open for a while, and nuclear is, a lot of countries are using nuclear.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting what happened, I think it was 2 years ago, when we ran some emergency legislation at the end of session, because Diablo Canyon was supposed to be shut down and decommissioned. Well, that's 7% of California's energy is that one facility. And so overnight, we were going to lose 7%. Well, we'd have blackouts immediately if that went offline. So the governor realized this and then did some emergency executive orders, and then we did some emergency legislation at the end of session to keep it open for a number of years. The European countries are really, really focused on nuclear, and we're going the opposite direction. We've even talked a lot about small modular nuclear reactors where you can have, you know, a small nuclear reactor within a community that really fits on the bed of a semi truck. That's the technology that's out there right now. I mean, they have.
And it's safe, is that?
Or? Yeah, I mean, yes. I would argue it is safe, 100%. With nuclear technology, it's gone so far. I mean, everybody thinks of, you know, there's been two or three accidents, you know, throughout the nuclear history, right? And they're obviously awful. Like, they're not good. But where the technology is now, and where it's going to be in the next 10 years. It's a very, very different place right now. And it is one of the cleanest forms of energy we could ever possibly have.
The idea that with these timelines that you guys have for zero emission, is there room for innovation?
Well, there's a lot of room for innovation, as long as we're willing to accept it. I think a lot of times we let perfect be the enemy of good. And I think California, you know, politicians, including myself, we really need to step back and let some technologies develop. And then we can kind of readdress some of these issues because, yes, there is a ton of room for innovation within the clean energy space, but we have to be open-minded to it. And right now, we're just stuck, once again, on wind and solar, and we have to get past that.
Is it possible to just be on wind and solar and achieve the goals?
I don't believe so. No. No, I mean, and that's the other thing. Like, how much of our land are we going to cover with solar panels to make that happen, right? I mean, that's the whole other thing. Solar panels take a lot of room. I mean, there's a lot of space required for large, you know, solar farms. So no, I don't. And then on the wind side, like, I don't know about you, but I don't think, you know, windmills are particularly good looking, right? And so if you have a nice home, I mean, do you want to cover all the property around you with windmills? Same with solar. Like, I mean, solar panels aren't particularly good looking to just look at. So I think there's a lot of issues that we really need to address. And quite frankly, from a representative that represents the Central Valley, a lot of our LA and Bay Area colleagues think, we'll just put them over farmland, or we'll just do it in the Central Valley. Well, that's our home, right? And we don't necessarily want that there. So,
And in terms of the other side of it, this is on the grid side, mm-hmm. but then on the other side where cars are transitioning to electric, there are some impacts on the drivers, right?
Totally.
The cost of gas. Can you explain to us?
Yeah, I mean, you take whether it's a Tesla or an Audi or some of the ones that have the longest range right now, I think 450 miles, it's 420 miles is the longest range that you can drive. And that's depending on how you drive and, you know, if you run your AC and your heater and all those other factors. But when you're from a Central Valley area, like, we commute a lot, right? And so we're going to go to a charging station and set a Target parking lot for 20 minutes while we charge up our car. It just doesn't always make a ton of sense. And they're really, really expensive. A lot of folks that drive vehicles are, you know, in that upper middle class to high earners.
The electric ones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the farm labor workers, my community, the folks that come and work in the orchards, that, you know, all of our family members that, you know, we consider them family to us, like, no, they're not going to drive an electric vehicle. That's the last thing that they care about. You know, people right now, with the way that the economy is going, they just want to get to and from work, right? I mean, the cost of living is so high in California. To really go be forced into buying an electric vehicle is not the right path at all. And then, not to mention, our entire, you know, road, our infrastructure system is based on gas tax, right? So if we get rid of all that gas, we're losing a significant tax base for infrastructure. Because right now, like, Tesla owners don't pay, you know, obviously don't buy gas, so they don't pay into the infrastructure, the gas tax. So there's a lot of issues that have to be addressed as we move forward with this, you know, electric vehicle.
And the timeline is only a few years away, right?
Correct.
2035, is that true?
It is, yeah. And that's one thing, you know, about term limits. A lot of the politicians prior to us, you know, they were here only 6 years. And that average time was like 3.5 years, and then they were moving on. Well, now that we have 12-year term limits, a lot of the policies that we put in place, we're going to be there when that timeline comes due. And so it's kind of nice, because now we actually have to deal with the decisions that we make. And I can almost guarantee you that timeline will be lengthened. We're not going to meet that goal. We simply won't.
So there is flexibility if we don't meet those goals.
Yeah, we'll go back and run a piece of legislation and move it out a little bit further. Oh, yeah, there's always flexibility, for sure.
In your caucus, which is a nonpartisan mm-hmm. caucus, you guys, the problem-solving caucus, you guys are actually working really hard on looking at these things and how they would plan out, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I love about the problem solvers. It's not a group of, like, you know, just Republicans and moderate Democrats. I mean, we have progressive Democrats as part of the caucus as well. Like, but what we are is a group of people, both senators and assembly members, Democrats and Republicans, that want to get something done, right? And we want to get something done for all of California. This idea that one-party rule, we've seen it both federally and at the state level, it doesn't work. You know, we are all duly elected representatives to represent 500,000 people. And my constituents deserve to be represented just as much as somebody from LA, right? And that's what the problem solvers do, is we really take a whole, like, holistic look at what is the issue and how can we address that that benefits, you know, everybody. There's an old labor quote that was on, you know, the former chairwoman of appropriations, and she's now the chairwoman of the California Labor Fed. But she had a quote on her offices, like, doing the most for the most amount of people, right? And I really do think that that's a great quote to live by. You know, like, as we make legislation, as we pass laws, like, we really need to look at what are we doing for the most amount of people.
It's kind of, there are big goals, right? And somebody has to figure it out. Who is that? Is it the private industry or is it the legislature?
When I got elected in 2016, out of 80 of us in the assembly, there's only 17 of us that had held private sector jobs. So very few of my colleagues, both Democrat and Republican, understand what it's like to actually run a business in the state of California. So we don't want the legislators to be the one to figure it out. What I would far prefer is we set the goals. Okay, we want to meet whatever those goals may be. And then step back as government and let the private sector do their job. Give them the tools to be successful. Give them the ability, whether it's tax credits, you know, whatever it may be, right? Make California a state that really, like, shows that we enjoy innovation, that we want businesses to stay here and to develop in, you know, all of these new technologies to meet the goals that we set. So I certainly believe that California definitely struggles with that a little bit. Like, we overtax our business community and we kind of force them out of the state. But if we would actually embrace them, you know, the private sector will do wonderful things and meet those goals for sure.
So essentially the idea is you guys will set the goals and then maybe provide some opportunity grants or some sort of, and you guys are doing some grants, right, for the zero emission?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, this year right now in the governor's budget, we repealed the research and development, the R&D tax credit. We took that away from businesses this year. Right? And so that's a huge issue that, you know, we obviously fought very hard about, and we certainly don't like it. But that's what I mean, where a lot of times we set all these goals and then we handcuff the private sector from doing their job. And so then we wonder, well, why haven't we met these goals? And it's like, well, we haven't created enough incentives for people to actually go do that and to stay in California. So we sort of chase our tails on some of these issues for sure.
Do you think there is a trust issue between businesses and California government? And do you think this is solvable?
Oh, yes, there's an absolute trust issue for sure. And it's absolutely solvable. I mean, it's not hard. It is not a complicated thing to really open up the doors, open up the free market again, and allow innovation to thrive. But when you continue to drive up taxes for people that can just go 120 miles east of us into a different state, like, why would they stay here? And that's the frustration that a lot of us have, both Democrat and Republican, mind you, is this is not a partisan issue. We right now need to step back and really create a state that is business friendly again. Because in the last really 10 years that I've been involved in politics, we've done everything to hurt business community as opposed, in my opinion, doing the opposite and doing everything we can to support them.
In the future view of California, do you think that the oil and gas space is gone? Or do you think it will be here to stay? Or do you think the goals that we have might not be realistic, or are they realistic?
I don't think oil and gas is going to go away in the state of California. I think it's already been significantly reduced, but I think we will always have a need for fossil fuels within the state of California. I do. Now, whether you like that or not, you know, some people may watch this, may not, you know, agree with that. But the reality is, at least for the next, you know, 10, 15 years, we don't have the technology. We simply don't have it yet. Now, we also know technology moves very, very fast, right? And so in a decade, you know, batteries may be significantly more, you know, efficient and a lot smaller, which is going to be a good thing. That will help us, you know, electrify. But right now, for the foreseeable future, I don't see oil and gas going anywhere.
If the batteries were there, do we have enough solar energy to, is the problem with solar is just the battery, or is it?
No, we do not. If like, once again, if we flip the switch tomorrow, we do not have the energy to meet those needs at all, or the batteries to do it. No, that we do not have the infrastructure or, you know, just the hard, I mean, to create a battery, I mean, that's a lot of mining. I mean, that's a lot of cobalt. There's a lot of things that go on to create these batteries, which is a whole other thing that, you know, we haven't even discussed. Like, just because we don't mine it in the state of California, you know, I mean, there's mines all over the Congo that have got slave labor digging up cobalt, you know, so we as Californians feel good about ourselves, right? Because we're driving, you know, a clean energy.
Well, we don't see the process.
That's correct.
We haven't seen the process, right, what it goes through to get what we
correct.
Are getting.
Let me be very clear. Like, I'm a huge EV guy. Like, I think that's a great technology, and I think, you know, all of the auto manufacturers have invested so much time and energy and money into developing them, have done a remarkable job. And I don't want that market to go away. I just think there needs to be a balance to it. And right now, we have not found that balance.
Do you think the goals are too aggressive?
Yes, absolutely. And let's be honest, like, some people just may not want to drive electric vehicle, and that's okay too.
So. And what about the charging infrastructure? Is there a plan from the state to do something about? Because there needs to be a lot more charging infrastructure.
Yeah. No, there really is no plan. There's a lot of goals out there, but even when you want to you know, put in something, right, a charging station, the permitting process can take months, if not years, to put in a charging station. So we have a lot of issues on the planning side with, you know, government bureaucracies getting plans approval, you know, plans approved, right? So there is a lot of work that needs to be done to meet these goals from the infrastructure side. And even if we wanted to build it all tomorrow, we couldn't. We would get sued under CEQA laws, you know, that would get stopped, right? So the governor is doing, I would say, he's understanding some of those issues now, where to meet these goals, we're going to have to pull back some of the red tape so we can actually build the infrastructure and not allow certain groups to just jam up everything, which they have been for a long time.
That's the question that is coming to mind. How are these environmental groups, when the state wants to do something for the environment, how are they fighting that?
Because the perfect is the enemy of good for them. They only see it in their way. And it's so, so frustrating. Again, I've been on Natural Resources Committee for a very long time. And you look at back through the wildfire history, okay? We know that there's three things that sustain fire. It's oxygen, it's ignition, and it's fuel, right? You take any one of those things away, fire goes out. It's science. It's fire science. Through every fire academy that I've ever been to, they teach this principle. You literally have environmental groups coming and testifying in committee saying that there is no proof that a reduction in fuel reduces fire spread and fire behavior, right? Which is just absolutely mind-numbing to me that they can say this. But they are so deep into their ideology that sometimes it gets away of just thoughtful thoughts. And that's one thing we really do struggle with in the state of California. There's a lot of groups out there that they're just so focused on their ideology that they can't see the forest through the trees.
And now, does that impact you guys' decision-making in the legislative
body? Totally. Absolutely. Not so much mine, personally, right? But no, when you said Natural Resources Committee that I've been on for a long time now as well, absolutely. They come in and they testify in opposition to all of these different bills. And, you know, there's environmental groups for everything. And you have no idea who they are. I mean, it could be one person or it could be 100 people. But they will absolutely come in opposition. And yeah, it means a lot to my Democratic colleagues when they hear environmental groups opposing a piece of legislation. They take that very, very serious, for sure. It definitely has an impact.
Based on you and your colleagues, your work at the Problem Solving Caucus, where do you see the zero emission? When should it be? And have you guys thought about what it will look like? What will
the state
look like? Yeah, time frame.
Yeah, no, we haven't talked about it. There's no time frame, and we don't actually think there should be a time frame. Or, you know, just me personally, like when the technology is there, then we'll be ready to go. But until then, it's going to be a net negative for a lot of the communities, and that's one thing we don't want. So we would prefer to let the technology and infrastructure catch up before we start putting any timelines on anything.
You mentioned that sometimes some of these policies have been hurting the lower class, middle class Californians. Can you explain to us how?
When you take a vehicle that you've been driving for a long time, right, and all of a sudden that vehicle, you can't get smogged anymore, or you can't, you know, repair it, and you're kind of being forced into buying a new vehicle, okay? Like, that's obviously a huge cost to people. And then on top of that, with as we, you know, build out infrastructure, right, there is a tremendous cost to that, which gets passed down to the ratepayers. So as, you know, whatever, you know, utility you're in, as they're building out, they're forced to do all these things, right? And then that cost gets put on the ratepayer. Well, then now your cost of energy has gone up just in your day-to-day life. Once again, we've talked about, you know, for every action, there's a reaction. And a lot of our colleagues, you know, that live in some of the more, you know, urban settings, they don't quite understand that trickle-down effect to the rural communities is huge. Because we feel that a lot, you know. And once again, I'm a Central Valley guy. Well, on the coast, you don't necessarily run your AC a lot, right? Well, in the Central Valley, yeah. I mean, we've had a week of 100 plus degrees. Well, our AC is running constantly.
So your electricity bills is going to be a lot.
It's huge. Higher. And so if your rates continue to go up and you continue to have high usage because it's so hot, then that really, really hurts us disproportionately more than some of our you know, coastal friends.
This is a topic that you're passionate about. How did you get involved with this and why?
A good friend of mine was Senator Anthony Cannella from the Central Valley. And if you would have told me a decade ago that I'd be in politics, I'd said, you're out of your mind. You know, my family's in agriculture. I was a firefighter, went to medic school, and like I thought that's what I was going to do. You know, and then did a lot of international sales for the family business. But then once we got involved with politics, you know, we realized very quickly that we're not really being represented very well as a Central Valley. We just didn't have the numbers of the, you know, our issues. We've said it a lot. You know, I have a lot of my Democratic colleagues that represent the Central Valley. They're great, and we all agree on pretty much everything because our issues aren't partisan, they're regional. The problem is, though, we haven't done
this is a very different region than some other parts of California.
Well, yeah, if we all represent 500,000 people, right, well, where's most of the population at? It's in San Francisco, LA area, right? So they have a lot more of our colleagues that represent them, right? So they have a lot more votes. Those of us in the Central Valley are like, hey, wait a minute, what about us, right? And so we have spent a lot of time, you know, since I've been elected, trying to educate our colleagues on why our issues are important and why, you know, this one piece of legislation may have an adverse effect on my region. And so it's something in the last 8 years we've really, really focused on. And, you know, a dear colleague of mine, she's no longer in the building, but Assemblywoman Autumn Burke, you know, she's from LA. You know, she did, I don't know, 100 plus ag tours over the time that she was in the legislature, like really trying to learn, you know, about the Central Valley and what it means to be a farmer in the state of California. And she was tremendously helpful on so many issues, that really working with us and trying to make sure that that legislation, whatever it may be, wasn't going to, you know, be harmful to our communities as well. So that's kind of one of the upsides of being from the Central Valley is we've really spent a lot of time, you know, educating our colleagues. It's been fun.
And you guys bring a lot of value to the state in terms of agriculture and energy, right?
Absolutely. I mean, not only to the state of California, but to the world. California is by far the breadbasket of the world. Nowhere else. It's one thing in my previous life, I did a lot of the international sales. And so it was all ag-related, right? And so we went to the growing regions of pretty much every continent. And nobody has the dirt that we do, the soil that we do, the water that we do, and really the laws that protect, you know, consumers, you know, whether it's from pesticides and all the different sprays, applications that we use. We have by far the cleanest, safest food of anywhere in the world. And so it's something, yeah, we're very, very passionate about. And that's why when we start talking again about solar, like, no, I don't really want people to take ag land and put solar panels on top of it. That just doesn't make sense because we have to have that dirt to grow products that feed the world.
Do you think it's possible to not use the ag land and put the solar in other parts of the state, or is it going to compete with this, with agriculture land?
It is possible, but then again, there's certain areas that are going to be better for solar than others, and a lot of times, a lot of those areas are ag land. Now there is some folks that are working, you know, just a little bit north of us from where we're sitting now, just over the Grapevine, in Westlands Water District, where if you have fallowed ground because you don't have the water to farm it anymore, you know, they're working with those farmers to put solar panels on top of that for energy. So they are doing some of those projects, which I absolutely support. But when it comes to like fertile farmland, no, I don't think it's smart at all to cover that with solar panels.
What is the solution? You're part of the problem solving caucus, and you guys have been working on these issues. Like, what's the best way of handling this transition to zero emission?
Yeah, I mean, if I was the governor, you know, and I could just snap my fingers, you know, I think there's a couple things that we could do. I think, one, first of all, we have to relook at what we view as renewable energy. You know, we talked previously, you know, pretty much everywhere else in the world, you know, views nuclear, hydro, geothermal, you know, wind, solar, among a few others, as renewable energy. Within the state of California, we only view wind and solar. And so that is a huge issue. So first thing I would do is make sure that we actually accept all renewable energies, right? I think that would go a long way to start solving our issues. Second thing I would do is we'd have to build out our infrastructure. You know, until we have the power plants and the grid to support this massive shift of energy into electrification, we're gonna be in big trouble. We do not have the infrastructure to do that. And then I would just turn it over, you know, the free market loose. Set those goals, make sure that we have goals that are attainable, and then allow and create a business climate within the state to develop those new technologies needed to meet those goals within the state of California. And so I think those would be the three things that if I had my way tomorrow, those would be what I'd focus on.
And your family, you guys have come in the 20s, you mentioned. You've come in the 20s to California. Can you tell us more about them?
Yeah, so yeah, my great-grandparents came from North Dakota in the 20s and west side of Modesto and started farming there. And then we've all stayed. And there's about three generations now that live in the state of California, all within the Modesto area. We really haven't traveled too far from that. You know, my dad in really the 70s started farming in Stanislaus County and all the way into Bakersfield, primarily in the almond industry. And then in 2005, just because we saw kind of where the dust was going, and farming is kind of dirty at times. So we developed harvesting equipment that reduced dust. Once again, trying to keep our environment and the air quality what we want to breathe. So it's been a lot of fun being born and raised in the state.
Assemblyman Heath Flora from Modesto, it was great to have you on California Insider.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.